We've only ended up with one case on our docket today, so we will proceed through that. Presbyterian Community Hospital of Denton versus Connie Smith et al.
May it please the court, Ms. Melinda Angle will argue for appellants. Mr. Darrell Keith will argue for appellees.
All right, Ms. Angle.
May it please the court. My name is Miranda Anger. I'm with the firm Jones Carmen Goldrick, and I'm here this morning representing Presbyterian Hospital of Denton and the nurse Chad Hammonds. Throughout my discussion, I will refer to them as appellants, appellant hospital, and appellant Hammonds, or appellant nurse, rather. The underlying case in this appeal is a medical malpractice case, and this appeal is based on a denial of a Civil Practice and Remedies Code 74.351 motion to dismiss based on insufficient reports. The two reports at issue were one filed by a physician, Dr. Halkos, and filed by a nurse, Nurse Heyman. I'm here today to ask this court to reverse the trial court's order denying the appellant's motion to dismiss and render dismissal with prejudice on behalf of the appellants. As the procedural history is well established by both parties' briefs, I don't intend to rehash it here, but I will take any questions that the panel has. I'm also sure that the court has heard numerous medical malpractice cases involving the sufficiency of expert reports, so I will not belabor with the history of the statute, and I'll proceed directly into my arguments. The trial court abused its discretion in denying appellants' motions to dismiss because the reports of Dr. Halkos and Nurse Heyman, when considered together collectively, are deficient as a matter of law for the foregoing reasons. First, they do not meet the statutory requirements with respect to the element of causal relationship. Expert reports must discuss the standard of care, the breach of the standard of care, and the causal relationship. Causal relationship is a bridge. It is necessary to provide a bridge between the element of breach of the standard of care and the injury and harm being claimed. Nurse Heyman cannot satisfy the causal relation requirement as a matter of law. Section 74.351 R5C specifically says that a physician must be the person who opens on causation. Nurse Heyman is a nurse, is therefore unqualified to offer an opinion about causation.
But and don't they concede that and rely on Dr. Halko's report in connection with the causal relationship?
Yes, Your Honor, and I'll be moving more into that shortly. While they're not saying this is per se a causation opinion that's being offered by Nurse Heyman, the opinions within his report are based on causal assumptions and medical diagnoses that he himself has made. And in that respect, it is a causation opinion and it is insufficient. I will address that point more sufficiently and shortly. Dr. Halko's report is deficient as a matter of law with respect to causal relationship for two reasons. First, he does not address the specific opinions regarding standard of care and breach as to the appellants. He relies entirely on the first report of Mr. Heyman, the nurse, and that report was found by the trial court to be deficient. He does not reference the supplemental report, which the trial court later found to be sufficient, and which I will shortly discuss, we also believe to be an abuse of discretion. As such, there is no bridge between breach of the standard of care and injury alleged as with respect to these appellants. The second reason his report is deficient with respect to causal...
I'm not following your argument.
Yes.
You're saying that a report that was found to be adequate didn't reference a supplemental report, and so somehow it's retroactively now not adequate?
The report that... to clarify, Dr. Halko's report references the first report that's filed by Nurse Heyman. This report is found by the court to be deficient. Nurse Heyman then makes an effort to cure that report. That report, which we contend was an abuse of discretion, is found to be sufficient by the trial court. There's no reference between that report, which is meant to cure this deficiency, in Dr. Halkos.
Deficiency in the nurse's report. The doctor's report was never held to be insufficient.
Correct. But that report, the doctor's report, never discusses the standard of care and breach as to the appellants. He never goes into that. That's all found within the nurse's report. So with that report being struck out, so to speak, his report is based on is based on the contents of that report, which is was found to be deficient. My second reason for the deficiency as a matter of law with regards to the causal relationship of Dr. Halkus' report is that he employs a shotgun approach and lumps all of the defendants together in his causation description. The statute and case law require that causal relationships be spelled out specifically in a non-conclusory fashion as to each defendant, separate and apart from the others. Statute requires an expert report with the required elements as to each defendant, and with respect to the second purpose of the expert report, to notify the put the trial court in awareness of the merits of the case, the trial court must make a determination as to each defendant that this report is sufficient. My second argument to the court this morning is that the Hayman report, there's Hayman's reports, both, are deficient as a matter of law with respect to the elements of standard of care and breach. The trial court ruled as such regarding the first report authored by Nurse Hayman. We expect that the counsel for the appellees, as he did in his brief, will simply argue that the report was found to be deficient in two narrow respects: statements regarding neurological impairment and the need for the use of restraints. The language seized on by the trial court did, in fact, involve neurological impairment and the need for the use of restraints. The examination was, or should have been, however, that report was deficient with respect to the elements of standard of care and breach because all of those opinions were based entirely on causation assumptions or medical diagnoses that were made by Nurse Hammond, which he is not qualified to make. The standard of care is defined as that which a reasonably prudent healthcare provider, here a nurse, would or should have done under the same or similar circumstances. It's situational and dependent on circumstances. In order to open as to the standard of care and that appellants violated the standard of care, Nurse Hayman made assumptions regarding the presence of a neurological deficiency and the resulting need for restraints. He's simply not qualified to make such determinations as a nurse. The court allowed for a 30-day extension and a supplemental report authored by Hayman was filed with the court. The court found that report to be sufficient and again denied the appellant's motion to dismiss. We believe the trial court abused its discretion in doing so. Nurse Hayman attempts to qualify his causal assumptions as saying he's merely stating a nursing diagnosis or nursing assessment. However, he is doing much more than that. And because he is not a physician, he's incapable of curing the defects found within his report. A nursing diagnosis does not include assigning a cause of symptoms or behavior. It is simply to identify symptoms present with the patient.
What if a nurse has to take immediate action? Can a nurse not?
A nurse can make it, yes, Your Honor. A nurse may make...
A nursing assessment and then take immediate action based on that?
Yes, Your Honor. A nurse may make a nursing assessment to determine if there's a need to take intervention, as you said. What my contention is here is that he is not able to, his opinions are based on an assumption that there was a neurological deficiency present. He looks at the medication doses and determines there would be a neurological deficiency here. He's not qualified to make that decision. That's a causation opinion. There was a medication, there would have been a response, this is the response, and the requirement would have been restraints. That's an opinion that Nurse Hayman is not able to offer under the law. That's an opinion for a physician to offer because it is a causation opinion. And because Nurse Hayman's opinions are rooted in this assessment, this neurological deficiency that he is diagnosing or making a medical assumption about.
How is it a causation opinion?
It's a causation. My argument for why it's a causation opinion is that he's making a medical diagnosis by drawing the inference that looking at the medical medication that was provided, that there would have been a neurological deficiency that would have been present, an altered mental state. He looks at that and says that this would have resulted in a neurological impairment. That is a causation. And granted, a nurse, depending on his or her qualifications, should be able to offer opinions regarding standard of care and breach, but not if those opinions are inextricably intertwined with causal assumptions and or medical diagnoses. He has attributed a particular symptom or behavior to something at the exclusion of other potential causes. That is a medical diagnosis that is for a doctor to do. What Heyman has done is take disputed facts and make causation assumptions about them. His opinions regarding standard of care and breach, therefore, are based on these two issues, neurological impairment and the need for the use of restraints.
Excuse me, can I ask another question going back to what you just said? How do we know that he took disputed facts and that's not within the four corners of his report? I'm just repeating what you said with respect to he used disputed facts on which to base his opinion in part. Where would we get that information to know that he based it on disputed facts? Wouldn't we be going outside the
scope
expert
of
report to consider that argument?
I apologize for the ambiguity in my word choice. By disputed facts, what I mean is that he's saying that there was this neurological deficiency and this need for restraints. It's unsupported. It comes from nowhere. It comes from Nurse Heyman's assessment of the situation. And in that regards, that's why I say that it's disputed, because I'm disputing it. But you are correct. It is not disputed within the four corners of the report. I apologize to the court.
And he's not competent to make that or qualified to make that assessment because he's only a nurse.
Correct. To conclude, the HALCOS report is deficient as it fails to adequately address the causal relationship and its relation to each defendant. The Heyman report is insufficient as it is founded on causation assumptions and medical diagnoses which he is not qualified to make. The trial court abused its discretion in finding these reports to be sufficient. I respectfully ask this court to reverse and render a dismissal with respect to these appellants. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Anger. Mr. Key.
May it please the court, it is my great privilege to represent the appellees before this court, the plaintiffs in the court below, the family and estate of Thomas Smith in this very serious medical malpractice case arising out of what we allege was Mr. Smith's wrongful death. It is very unfortunate, in my view, that a large joint commission accredited, licensed acute care hospital and one member of its nursing staff would come before this court and violate both the letter and the spirit of the law of Chapter 74, Section 74.351 on the expert reporting requirements and the Supreme Court's decision in Palacios and its progeny, including the vast body of law announced by the intermediate courts of this state. Ironically, the hospital and Nurse Hammonds are legally violating and engaging in the violation of the very standards that they say were applicable to the plaintiffs, the appellees, in the expert reports of Dr. Halkos and Nurse Heyman. Their brief and their argument today is conclusory. It is baseless. They have cited no legal or medical authority beyond the basic landmark rulings of Palacios, its progeny, and arguably some of the court's opinions from this court. Instead, they stand before you both in their brief and their oral argument and tell you that a nurse can't do this and a nurse can't do that and a nurse can't comment on matters relating to risk, and they want to confuse the nursing knowledge, skill, and experience that Nurse Hammonds should have possessed, either possessed or should have possessed, according to the standards of reasonable, prudent, nursing care applicable to him in the care and treatment of Mr. Smith without citing to you any medical authority or any legal authority for that proposition. They cite no case. Counsel for the hospital and Dr. Hammonds boldly stands before you and argues that she is the authority for the proposition that Nurse Hammonds is commenting on causation, and that as a matter of law, he can't do that because although Texas courts, the Supreme Court and Texas Intermediate Courts, historically recognized that if a qualified registered nurse was demonstrated to have the nursing education, training, and experience and knowledge regarding the causal relationship between a nursing standard of care violation and the harm, injury, or death to the patient, then that nurse was qualified to testify on causation, and its admissibility was not in question, and the matter of the nurse's testimony on causation went to the weight to be decided by the jury as the trier of fact. Sadly, in my opinion, the legislature in 2003 chose to change the common law and restrict causation testimony in medical malpractice cases to testimony by physicians who were qualified by education, training, and experience. And of course, this court is therefore bound to follow that legislative edict. But the plaintiffs in this case have not violated the Texas Medical Liability Act in that regard. Now, with regard to Dr. Halkos's report, the attack that Dr. Halkos's report is not adequate on causation, that is a spurious argument because the trial court, Judge Robeson, in his discretion, found very narrowly, that a portion of Nurse Hammonds' report to be deficient. He didn't find it deficient in its entirety in a very narrow matter with regard to neurological impairment and restraints. And he found, at that time, the judge on the record indicated that it was his concern that the statements by Nurse Hammond indicated more of a medical diagnosis or assessment or knowledge, and that the report didn't adequately convey to the trial court information to demonstrate Hammond's qualifications to testify on the standard of care responsibility of Hammonds to make a neurological make an assessment of neurological impairment because of the administration of the narcotic drugs to Mr. Smith, and intervene to administer wrist restraint so that he would not have allegedly self-removed the IV line that had been placed in his body. As I mentioned in the brief, and I would remind the court, in the Supreme Court in N. Ray Jordan, when considering whether or not plaintiffs can invoke the Rule 202 investigative deposition rule to investigate prior to filing a health care liability claim under Chapter 74 without discussing any constitutional concerns because they were not raised in the case, did in explaining that Rule 202 was excluded as a discovery tool for the plaintiff in a medical malpractice case governed by Chapter 74, but pointed out that the trial court can consider the state of the medical record in evaluating the adequacy of the expert reports. In this case, as we cite in the brief, and the medical records in this case are voluminous, as demonstrated even by the demonstrated by what our expert, Dr. Halko, said, and from the summary of the case, Nurse Hammond and Dr. Bolton, and we cite in the brief, their notations of the events, the critical events leading up to Mr. Smith's death, And it is absolutely appalling. It is disgraceful. Dr. Bolton said something like, events of night noted. No detail, no description. And the same for Nurse Hammond. Very, 8 or 9 or 10 words. Didn't describe what happened, didn't describe the monitoring, what was hooked up, what wasn't hooked up, whether alarms went off, were the alarms set, how were they set, what were the intervals, what monitoring was done. And Mr. Smith was in an intensive care unit. And as the expert reports reflect, he was entitled to a standard of care consistent with what he needed in an intensive care environment. In any event, Nurse Hammond made in his first report, and he is a highly qualified cardiac critical care nurse, as demonstrated by his CV and the summary of his qualifications in his report. His criticism of what Nurse Hammond's and Nurse McIlvaney did or failed to do, his criticisms didn't change. He criticized Nurse Hammond's for not recognizing the neurological impairment, not intervening with with restraints and taking other appropriate action. The trial judge only said that Nurse Hammond's testimony on that theory was inadequate. So all we did in getting Nurse Hammond's supplemental report, if you read it carefully, is that he simply went into more detail to describe and explain how and why Nurse Hammond's, how a reasonably prudent nurse, standards applicable to Nurse Hammond's, knew or should have known to appreciate make a nursing assessment of the neurological impairment and appreciate the risks and so forth. And I will comment further in a moment. So there was no need to supplement Dr. Hammond's report, because the supplemental report cured the deficiency in the first report as to the basis for the opinion, and did not change his criticism of what Hammond's did in violating the standard of care. Now, with regard to the causation argument and Dr. Halko's report, he doesn't lump together all of the defendants and intertwine their conduct. I respectfully submit that while the paragraph on causation is lengthy, and I think it's at paragraph 18 of his report, 18 and 19, Dr. Halkos, a cardiovascular thoracic surgeon who's currently at the time of this report was working on a fellowship. He's fully trained, board certified, completed his residency, and was working in a fellowship to refine his medical education and training. He's now completed that. He was in that training, finishing his fellowship training, sets forth causation, and he talks about how each of the defendant's conduct caused or contributed to cause the adverse result, the injuries and death, to Mr. Smith. And they're clearly identifiable. And the hospital and Nurse Hammond's are put on notice as to what the plaintiff's conduct is calling into question on standard of care and causation, and it gives fair notice to the trial court to determine that we have a meritorious claim in that regard, and therefore constitutes a good faith effort to comply with the Palacio standards. With regard to the hospital and Nurse Hammond's attack on Nurse Hammond's report, again, a careful evaluation of the order on Nurse Hammond's initial report. First of all, Nurse Hammond's gives a very detailed summary of the the summary of the factual events from his review of the hospital records from a nursing standpoint, and then at page 10 sets out, paragraph 10, which is lengthy. It's 3.5, almost 4 pages of single space statement commentary on the standard of care applicable to Nurse Hammonds and the violations of the standard, that is, the failure of Nurse Hammonds to meet the standard. He sets out in detail what a nurse was required to know. And it is fundamental and axiomatic in Texas law that physicians and healthcare providers, including nurses, in order to meet the standard of reasonable and prudent care applicable to them, in this case nursing, which is the threshold question in a medical malpractice case, as this court knows, this court in Cohen versus Winters in 1983 made that announcement and has been incited and actually, I think, forms the basis for the Palacios case. If you trace the case cited by Justice Hankinson in Palacios, it'll lead you back to Cohen versus Winters. Nurse Hammonds is required to possess a reasonable degree of nursing knowledge and skill and exercise his nursing knowledge and skill with reasonable care and diligence. The degree, this is Torts 101, the degree of care is oftentimes directly related, is relevant to the risk involved. And so what Nurse Hammonds has done is contrary to the hospital and Nurse Hammonds' argument that he's trying to usurp the province of the physician to discuss causation. In discussing what a reasonably prudent critical care nurse should have known includes his knowledge of the making a nursing neurological assessment. The hospital knows that nurses are not the handmaidens and order takers of the doctors. They are independently trained nursing professionals who are the eyes and the ears and the brains of the doctors when they're gone. They're at the bedside constantly or very close by with monitoring reporting responsibilities. And so what is contained in Dr. Hammond, in Nurse Hammond's report is an explanation of the knowledge that the nurse should know and know the consequences that if they don't do these things, adverse results can occur. And that is an explanation of the standard of care knowledge skill that they should have, that he should have possessed and utilized in recognizing and making a nursing assessment or diagnosis. And Nurse Hayman cites at least 2 or 3 authorities, recognize a nursing text, one of whom is entitled Nursing Diagnosis. But he puts it in the context of nursing diagnosis or assessment that Hammond should have made, appreciated the risk, which then authorized him to make an intervention to apply the risk restraints, which a nurse is entitled to do, according to his testimony in this document.
Mr. Keith, we need to wrap up.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
And so it's our position that appellate counsel, the hospital, counsel for the hospital and Hammond's, can come in here and tell this court what a nurse should do or shouldn't do or what they should know or not know, but that is not adequate. Appellant counsel on these issues is not legal or medical authority to support their propositions. We therefore ask this court to affirm the trial court, find that the court did not abuse his discretion in finding that the report of Dr. Halkos was sufficient and the supplemental report alone in combination with Dr. Halkos' first report were sufficient, and order that the case be returned to the trial court to proceed to the trial, to discovery and trial of this case. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Keith. Ms. Anger? Ms. Bezak, will you add 1 minute to her time just in case she needs that?
I just want to address a few points on my rebuttal. First, counsel brings up In re Jordan, a Texas Supreme Court case. It does not apply here. We're not arguing that the arguments in In re Jordan relate more to basis of an adequacy of a report based on the adequacy of medical records. By having deficiency in the report because it jumps to conclusions or it's flawed because the medical records are insufficient. We're not, our arguments here are not that. Our arguments are that he's lumped together his causation, his causal relationship arguments are insufficient. Nurse Heyman's report, he's not qualified to make medical diagnoses, and his opinions are based upon medical assumptions. And the Heyman supplemental report, as counsel brings up, it did not change so significantly, and the court did find it to be sufficient, which we do believe is an abuse of discretion. That is part of the fundamental point of our argument, that Heyman did exceed the scope of his qualifications in making commentary, in making decisions based on a medical assumption and medical diagnosis. Lastly, the causation opinions are there in Nurse Heyman's report. It's fundamental. It's not my own personal definition. He determines that this was the dosage of pain medication. This would have resulted in a neurological deficiency. And then restraints would be required. That's a causation opinion. That exceeds the scope of what he's allowed to opine on, and his opinions thereafter are based upon that opinion. If the panel has no questions, then I cede the rest of my time. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Anger. Mr. Keith, we appreciate your arguments and your briefing today. Your case is submitted. If the clerk will now adjourn us.